broadcasting online 24 hours a day and via Android and iPhone apps. This is East London Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the ELR Sports Show on East London Radio. We are joined by no Stephen tonight. We have got Adam with us in the studio, and we're also joined by the Orient Outlook podcast. We also have news from our local teams, Wapping Hockey Club, Lee Valley Lions, and of course BBL's very own London Lions. Welcome everybody. Thanks, that was a nice introduction. Thank you for that, Adam. Welcome everybody. Adam, how have you been?
I've been alright, how you been?
Yeah, good, thanks for stepping in tonight, much appreciated.
More than welcome.
Stephen is out to do another bits and pieces, but obviously the show must go on, quite literally. So Adam has stepped in and he's on the controls. And also, we've tried to work out how long it's been since you guys were on the show. We have Paul and Steve from the Hour and Outlook podcast. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Very well. Oi, oi!
Good evening. Thanks for having us.
There's a lot chirpier this time around.
Much different mood. Yeah. Much different mood.
So the last time we actually, I think you came on, was literally a couple of days after or before the takeover.
So that was June 22nd.
Wow.
Yeah, 2017.
Good knowledge that. And things are looking much better, 19 games in. We've got some notes here. We've been looking at the results. Obviously, me and Steve talk about West Ham and Orient, obviously all the local teams, and it's nice to report on winning teams, and Orient are certainly one of them at the moment. So it's been second in the league, 1 point off Wrexham, one loss in 19. Gentlemen, it's good times.
It's so far been an absolutely fantastic season for Leighton Orient. If you would have asked any Orient fan after 19 games that you'd be second, one defeat, some superb football, some great performances, stable on the pitch, performing tremendously well off it, I think every Orient fan would have been absolutely delighted. And we sit here, yeah, second in the league, just beat Fylde 3-1 with an outstanding away performance. Team looked good, scoring goals, defending well, fan base happy, a fan base who are engaged, owners who are taking the club forward. It's a club that are going places this season.
And it's a pleasure to be a supporter of, and particularly from when we were on previously on this show, talking about nothing but doom and gloom. As Steve says, it's a very, very, very different proposition now. And you know, we're breaking our own records with attendances, with season ticket sales, with the level of sponsorship engagement that we've got. We've got Dream Team as our front of shirt sponsor, who are producing some video documentaries that are getting outstanding levels of engagement across, so that it's drawing attention from the whole football community. You know, you've got Danny Macklin, a CEO that's that's really driven the marketing and sponsorship side of things as well, and his team have really pulled out a lot of sponsors. So there's money coming in from sort of everywhere, really, and the fan base as well. So it's not just purely reliant on Kent and Nigel as sort of wealthy benefactors.
I think in the summer, I think we didn't sign many players, and a few fans were probably a bit unexcited about the season. There was lots of demand to be signing more players. Justin said he had a good squad. He thought it didn't need much, and we started off the season with 3 draws. We looked okay, I think. You know, a few late equalisers at home cost us 4 points early on in the season, but we didn't win away to Maidenhead 1-2-1, and since then it's been no looking back. So Nicoli Bon has been scoring goals for fun, so continued where he left off last season. Joby McEnough continues to be amazing, especially considering he's probably the oldest guy on the pitch, you know, full of legs for 90 minutes consistently. George Elikobi got injured in the second game, so we had a young defender, Marvin Ekpeteta, who's come in and has been outstanding. He's been called up for England C. I mean, there's already talk of he's capable of playing at a much higher level, and no doubt he probably will play at a much higher level.
Right. With Orient.
We hope. But, I mean, on the pitch, I mean, every player pretty much has had a fantastic season. Dean Bruin goal has had a tremendous pre-season. This time last year he was a goalkeeping coach. Justin Edinburgh came in, put him in the team. Brill has kept us in many a game.
You know, cost us very, very few points, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Every goalkeeper is prone to an error.
Of course.
But
yeah,
the amount of errors that he makes by comparison to other goalkeepers is far, far, far fewer.
Yeah.
And obviously when you're a goalkeeper and you make a mistake, more often than not they'll lead to a goal, which people will remember you for, not the great saves that you made to keep us in a game at 2-1 and that we could have walked away with a point rather than a win. So it
can be a thankless task for sure.
It absolutely can be.
Justin Edinburgh is an interesting one because obviously he's very experienced, done a good job at Gillingham. He's, from looking at his record, he's done a pretty good job at wherever he's been, really. I know, you know,
he got Newport out of Harris, decision.
He got Newport
of
out.
Course,
yeah, that's probably the biggest success story that he had was when he was at Newport County and whatever happened there and he left there. And then I don't know what happened at Gillingham, but he wasn't there for long.
Yeah.
So you can probably read a little bit into that. I don't know what the problem was at Gillingham and at Northampton Town as well. You know, I don't think he was given enough time at Northampton, and I think he was plagued with injuries at either Gillingham or Northampton.
Yes.
One of the two, and they let him go saying, you've been unlucky with injuries, but then they gave the new manager all the support he needed by bringing in new players. So, but anyway, we don't really know enough about that to really sort of talk too much about it, but he's been a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And you can see this season that the players are fitter, and you can see that they're going the full 90 and not blowing, until the end, really, and they're not sort of collapsing on the floor.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the teams that we're playing, particularly the part-time ones, you can see they're starting to tire after about 70, 80 minutes. So we're fitter and stronger, and we're more streetwise to this league now as well. And I think him and Ross and Danny Webb have definitely brought an element of nous to the league this time.
Yeah.
So we're a lot more prepared. Plus, as Steve said, not having so many changes during the course of off-season, you're very much in a situation where everyone knows everyone. You go away for a team bonding, it's almost par for the course that everyone knows everyone anyway, because there's only a couple of new guys coming in.
Yeah.
I think Justin Edinburgh is a kind of manager, he suits that league, doesn't he?
Yeah.
The way he plays and the results he gets, he's suited for that league.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, he knows the formation, so he very rarely will go off a 4-4-2. So he knows 4-4-2, he knows you need two big strong central defenders, he knows you need to battle in the middle of the park, he knows the style of football you need. And under Steve Davis, we weren't necessarily seeing that. And I think Justin, as soon as Justin was linked with the job, probably this time last year, he was my instant first choice, and I was delighted when he got the job. And yeah, like Paul said, he's made us harder to beat. He's made some big calls, including dropping the two young keepers for his first game, bringing in the goalkeeping coach as the keeper, but that's paid dividends. He's got the best out of Joby Mackenough that I remember him in an orange shirt by a mile.
Yeah,
and he's likeable. And you know, when you see a team under Justin, they're going to give 100% on the pitch. And as a fan, that's all you can ask for.
I think you were saying just there about start with three draws, and when you played Maidstone, that's when it started. Hmm. I think it started from when you appointed Justin in the first place, after Christmas. I think if there was a league table that you had, if the league started in January and went to April, you would have been up there, definitely.
Yeah, there was a stat about that. If Justin had have started and accumulated the average points throughout from when he started, that we were playoff contenders.
Easy,
rather than struggling to make 13th.
Yeah, because where did you guys finish? Because it was brought you back to, it's probably not fair to say bring you back to reality, but last season was a bit of a check, wasn't it, for everyone, I think?
Of course, yeah. I mean, last season started and we flew out the blocks. We had a really good start, maybe too good, and then we went away to Bromley and got absolutely hammered.
Yes, I remember that.
Awful game.
And that was kind of the first kind of thinking of, this might not be as easy as what we thought it might, and then teams got a bit wise to us.
Well, you're the big dog on the block, I guess.
It was exactly like when the Leeds and the Leicesters and the Forests dropped down into League One out of the Championship, and
everyone's up for it, particularly.
And Portsmouth, when we first started playing Portsmouth, or going away at Portsmouth, you think, it's a big away day here.
Yeah.
I'm talking a long time ago, but nonetheless, you're playing former European champions and people that have played in the top flight.
Yeah.
And here they are turning up at Brisbane Road. So naturally, everybody ups their game.
Yeah.
And there were stories coming from the coaching staff and people at the club saying that when teams were turning up to, you know, look at the pitch as they do, as is tradition, they were taking selfies of themselves in our stadium, which is not the best stadium to have your picture taken in or do a selfie in, but that was a big day out for them. It was a big occasion.
Absolutely. I mean, it's similar to the London Lions, the basketball team, to cover, because they play at the Copper Box.
which is obviously part of the 2012 legacy, they had the same. Each team comes and has
pictures.
It's probably up for it, taking their photos, and they go the extra maybe 10-20% more than they would if they're playing a, you know, a Halifax away, maybe.
If you look at it as well, I can see similarities here. I know, obviously, these two, you and this team I'm going to mention, different circumstances completely. But the start you had last year and the way it's going now, it's very similar to what's happened to Chesterfield this year. I think they won 3 out of 3 or something, and since then they can't buy a win, and that's exactly what happened to you.
Similar.
They started strongly, didn't they?
Same situation. Come down the division, full of confidence. That first loss is a bit of a... brings it all home.
And then you can't buy a win. That's what's happened. They're really struggling at the moment.
Mm. And they're signing more players to try and... kind of buy their way out of this problem. But I don't know. Martin Allen's got a bit of a reputation for saving clubs, not promoting clubs so much, from what I can remember.
That's fair.
I don't know if he's the right guy to take them
as
where they want to go.
As your city approved, you're never too big to go right through from League 2 down to the National League North or South.
Yeah, and Torquay.
Torquay. Well, actually, funny enough, I went to see Orient Torquay last season in March, and it was... to be honest, the playoffs were kind of out of reach by then for you guys anyway, I think.
Don't even think we were close to it.
So it was one of those sort of going through the motions. But from what I saw, there was Oran had a lot of the ball, and Torquay, what tends to happen, I mean, it happens to Cheltenham quite a lot, and player teams, less glamorous teams, if you like, they nick a goal, and then it's just run out of ideas. And do you think that sort of sums up the season last year? Was it maybe you were the better team at times, and... because, like you say, you had some good results leading up.
I think we were quite unlucky last season, to be fair, to Steve Davis. I think George Alakobi, Josh Coulson, Charlie Lee all got big injuries. I think there were probably settling in problems for certain players last year. That Tuesday night game against Torquay, though, was probably one of the worst games you could have picked to go to last season. It was a horrible Tuesday night game, but we saw it all too often last season in terms of home to Halifax, home to Torquay, home to Maidenhead. Tuesday night games where it's cold, fans aren't feeling it, it's horrible. You concede an early goal, you can throw in Gateshead as well, which is 2-0, that one. It's just, you don't want to be there. The team aren't doing well, but your opposition are well up for it and having a brilliant night, and their keeper's making great saves.
I remember. Well, so for you guys last season, I mean, we don't want to dwell on last season too much, of course, but out of interest, when did you realise, right, this is going to be tougher than we think?
So, I don't know that everybody really gave it enough consideration that when Kent and Nigel took over in the middle of June, June 22nd, we only had like 9 or 10 youth players who had experience of League Two football, but actually there wasn't a player senior pro signed to the club. David Mooney was the first through the door, but that wasn't until a few days later.
Yeah.
But actually throwing a team together and having them gel is not as easy as what you might think. And I think supporter expectations were, well, we're a big club, we'll just bounce straight back up, we'll put a squad together, they'll just play, we'll win, we'll go back up, and, you know, that's how it will end. We'll just get promoted because we're just Leyton Orient. So we had this sort of big club mentality, and me included, I thought we'd at least get in the playoffs with whatever squad we put together. But I think you could see, like Steve said, like when we were, like under Steve Davis, where there are games that we should be winning... and not drawing, and games that we were losing that we should have at least got something from. And Steve wasn't... you could see the players weren't at it for him like they are for Justin. These guys will run through brick walls for Justin, whereas I don't think, hand on heart, you'd say that they would do the same for Steve Davis.
I think we Orient fans consider themselves a big League 2 club. So when you're in the conference, you know, we are the big cheese in the conference, and I think we kind of probably struggled with that at times, and away teams would come and put 10 behind the ball and go, okay, we'll play through us and see
which we didn't factor in,
which we didn't really have the setup for that, and we seem a lot more wiser to that this season, to be fair. But last season I think it was an adjustment for all of us, the fan base, the owners, the players to a certain extent, and we go, okay, that was a season we learnt, and we all came out of last season going, right, next season is the season where realistically we can push for it. We know the playing style of the division. The players have also now been playing together for 6 months, and now we've got a settled side and a settled manager. So there's a lot of expectation coming out of last season into this season. I remember we done a special with Nigel and Kent, and a lot of the fan base were there, and you could tell the expectation was like, right, this season we've written it off. It was kind of stabilised the club, make sure we don't go down again. And this season that we're in now is the season where we really push for it. So we learn from our mistakes, we take the club forward, and we go and we really aim hard to get out of the National League now.
In fairness though, Nigel and Kent always maintained a line that they weren't looking at playoffs. Secretly deep down maybe they were, but outwardly to communicatively to the rest of the fan base, it was always, I think they were a little bit more realistic about where we probably end up, and they were happy with a mid-table finish, which is effectively what Justin was able to salvage from our season, because at one point we were floating with the relegation zone, which is, having gone through two relegations in three seasons, we didn't want another one. So the fact that Justin came in and then sort of moved us away with some pretty convincing performances to start with. He had the first one was Solihull away, which was, he'd only been in the job 2 days, so I don't really count that. But then after that, he started to get to the crux of the problem and fix it.
How important is at least trying to get some, at least try to get promotion this year? Because financially, it could mean a lot for the club, because at the end of the season, if you don't go up, you lose your funding from the EFL for your academy, that sort of thing. So is it really important for the club as a whole to try and get out of the league this year?
I think so. I think because of the start we've had as well, so being unbeaten in the first 13, if you don't go up in the season where you start like that, then when are you going to go up? But it's a tough division to get out of. Only one team goes up automatically, and at the moment you've got ourselves, Wrexham and Salford almost pulling away. But we were saying before, the top of the table's changed for the last 3 weeks. So now it's Wrexham, it was us the week before that. The week before that, it was Salford. So at the moment, it's really neck and neck, and it's a tough league. But yeah, promotion, yeah, it's important because it will take the club forward as a whole. I think one thing that since the takeover's happened is the fan base have really come together. But then how do you expand on that fan base? Well, you go up and you play bigger teams and you make it a more attractive proposition. You're right about the funding, but it's a massive season for us. There's also a lot of players coming to the end of their contracts, and obviously if we want to keep them and keep hold of our better players, we need to go up, because Marmanek Beteta and Macaulay Bond, those good young players, it's a more attractive proposition to them playing in League 2 than what it is in the National League. It's just, that's a way of the beast, isn't it?
I think the other aspect to this as well, which is what's been covered by, you know, Kent and Danny have mentioned in the podcast, that they're actually, if we don't get promoted, yes, there is, you're absolutely right, the very real fact that the funding ceases. So there's then the question of, well, if we don't get up, do we actually review the academy and say we don't have an academy per se, and we go down the developmental route? Because although this is going to sound contradictory, if you look at our history of producing talent ready for first team football, it's actually quite poor. And I don't know that many clubs in the lower reaches of English football really properly actually have a path for players to come into their from academy into first team. The contradiction in my statement is the fact that we've got Miles Judd, Josh Caroma, who are in the first team at the moment and doing extremely well. And then there's the guys that we've sold on to the Leeds in Sam Dalby, and Stephen Alzate, who's at Premier League Brighton, doing very well at Swindon on loan.
Yeah, I saw that.
So there's a contradiction in terms. We've had a glut recently where we've actually had a good nucleus of players that were actually winning their leagues and winning their junior cups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then prior to that, there's only a handful. Moses Adebajo, who went from to Brentford for $1 million and then on to Hull for $2.5 million. We sold George Porter to Burnley for a couple of £100,000. But he didn't come through our academy. We poached him from Bromley. So there isn't really a massive, you know, like Crewe or like John Still at Dagenham, for example, when he was at Dagenham pulling youngsters through. But like Steve said, we've got Marvin Ekpeteta, who's a bit of a find. But again, he's not an academy product. He's a developmental product, if you like. But I don't know if the academies generally are worth much anyway. Is there enough talent that's coming into the game? Or
it's very financial based as well, because I know Portsmouth want to, I think, go up to category two from three. Yeah. Mark Catlin's basically come out and said, what's the point of us spending all this money to go to a category two when we're not going to reap hardly any of the rewards? There's hardly anything changes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough to make money out of an academy. I think, you know, it is expensive. But no, Nigel I know in Kent they'll have a plan in place if we go up to League 2, and there'll also be another plan whether we stand right. in the National League. So I don't think there'll be any kind of ad hoc decisions. I think they'll have a plan in place already and go, right, if we go up, this is what happens. If we stay in this division, we do this. I mean, one thing those guys do is they run the club well, and with a financially sensible head on their shoulders, and a business head as well as the supporters head, which is massive.
You've got quite lucky, I say. I think you certainly deserve a bit of luck with everything. Fortunate, yeah. With these two owners. I mean, how much, because they're obviously very vocal. I mean, you guys have interviewed them. It was on that
Our
show.
We had them, yeah.
Adam had done that interview for us. Yeah. I mean, are they the saviour of Lake Norien? I mean, is that fair statement?
You can never underestimate the quality of a good owner, never.
Yeah.
And you can see there's still plenty of clubs in trouble, a la Charlton,
absolutely,
that still have that, and Coventry and so on, and Mike Ashley at Newcastle. To have a fan own the club, to me, is crucial. How they then run it is obviously even more crucial, but to have someone who's got the heart of the club stamped all over them is for me quite fundamental. To have just some random guy come in and just sort of buy it, a la sort of the Vincent Tans and the
The
Glazers, those sorts of people that just come in and just see it as potentially as a money making machine for them, rather than actually what it does and means to the local community and the generations of people that have supported it. It's a much, much, much bigger deal. And if you don't understand that, you probably shouldn't own a football club. Yeah. So from our perspective, to have Nigel at the helm, if you like, but then he's managed to find, probably by a bit of luck and chance, really, someone like Kent, who, if you didn't know him, if you just landed on this planet and just spoke to Kent, you'd think he'd supported the club all his life.
He's
absolutely. He puts his heart and soul into it, and probably much to his family's dislike that he's over here a lot.
Yeah,
I think we found the perfect balance. I think we're very lucky. You've got two guys. You've got one who's been supporting the club since 1959. So when you talk to Nigel, he talks about his first ever match. He talks about seeing Leighton Orient v Man United in the Championship in 61. His favourite players are from the 60s. Mm. You've also got Kent, who's this really enthusiastic, passionate owner who gets it. So he gets what Leighton Orient's about.
Yeah.
He gets people. He's very personable.
And they're very honest and vocal.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And
nonsense.
You can approach Kent anytime. Like, anyone can approach Kent. When we had Kent on the pod, we went to dinner with him, and an Orient fan comes over, clearly nervous to come and speak to Kent, and Kent makes the guy feel like the most comfortable guy in the world, which is what Kent does. Kent comes around when we do podcasts to our houses, and the first thing he'll do is say hello to our wives, which, he doesn't have to do that.
Yeah, of course, he does.
He says hello. So he knows how to deal with people. He's a really personable, likable guy. So we've got this guy on one side, we've got Nigel on the other side, and both of them together, who are clearly both very successful businessmen, get how they want to move the club forward. I think, how could you have it better?
Yeah, you couldn't. We've gone from famine to feast, really. We've had a previous ownership who refused to engage with the fandom, and now you've got people that are strictly available to everybody. You pose questions and they get back to you. And that's really important for communicative purposes.
Is Matt Porter still there?
Yeah, he's a director.
Yeah,
he's a director. Yeah,
and
he's got the knowledge.
I know one or two Orient fans, they've said good things about Matt. He's a great.
He's outstanding.
Yeah.
Oh, throughout the board now, and Marshall, got Matt Porter, you've got Marshall Taylor again, who supports the club, but has got a really good business head on his shoulders. You've got Danny Macklin, who's come in about 9 months to a year ago, and has transformed the club commercially. So, you know, if you can sponsor it, if it moves.
If you can put a badge on it, we'll take your money for it, yeah.
You know, which is consistently raising the profile of the club. So we did touch upon it, but Dream Team, what Dream Team have done.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear more about these guys. Obviously, they're your shirt sponsor.
Yeah. So that came about because Andrew Butler is an Orient fan, and he works for Dream Team. I don't know much more than about how the details came about, but we had EnergyBet as our shirt sponsors, and that deal came to an end, and the opportunity for sponsorship came up, and they ran with it, and thankfully, from what I understand, it's a very good deal for everybody concerned.
But that, I mean, that is a clear example of that was a tough decision to make, because obviously Dream Team is associated with the Sun, so there was kickback from the fan base about that. But Nigel,
according to Kent, though, it wasn't as much as what you might think, though. Do you remember?
Yeah, they thought there'd be more, but there was still about kickback, and that was the kind of the first decision they'd really made that kind of had the possibility to split the fan base. But they took the right one. And Dream Team, you know, can reach, I think their Twitter following is something like 250,000. I mean, it might be much higher than that. It is much higher than that, to be fair. But when they post videos of Leighton Orient, when they post videos of Joby Mackenough in the club shop surprising a little girl with a Mackenough shirt, the reach that video gets, it gets like 250,000 views. And they do their own series on the club, and again, are completely driving the club forward. So reaching an audience that no National League club has a right to reach.
Yeah, I mean, that does. I mean, it's social. I know social media is obviously so key, but using it like that is
powerful.
Really great
tool.
And I mean, I knew Dream Team before they sponsored you guys. Actually, I used to follow them on Twitter and see their stuff. So it's great to obviously have them on your shirt, and also the other stuff they do. That's really great, and it just shows that not many National League teams probably get a sponsor like that, so it just speaks volumes. No.
The only one that comes close is Hartlepool, and that's through Jeff Stelling, Super
Six, of course,
Six,
yeah,
Sky Sports. That's the only other one that I can think of that actually have a pretty standout sponsorship. Every other club, I think, is going to be a sort of a sizable local business.
Yeah, sort of maybe have a bit of passion for it, or
they're not doing it for they're doing it for love, not for return on investment.
Of course, because it's a difficult one to judge, isn't it? What return on investment you get from a share sponsor, essentially. But I've just got your results up here. You're scoring a lot of goals.
Can't stop.
Which is great. I mean, everyone, and this probably goes hand in hand with the attendances, because obviously people, they want to come see Leighton Orient. We all love seeing goals. How good is it to see your club scoring goals like this?
It's nice. Not going to lie, it's very nice. So, I mean, having a Waterlooville a week and a half ago was 4-0. To be 3-up at half time, I can't remember that too many times as an Orient fan.
And being comfortable.
Being 3-up, being comfortable. Yeah. We went to Braintree and put 5 past Braintree.
Yeah.
But like we said, you know, we've got a good strike partnership, Bonnie Cromer scoring goals, and goals being chipped in from all areas of the pitch. But I think at the moment, I think the attendances are just, it's a complete transformation in terms of the support and the engagement that the club has. The attendances, you know, we've broken season ticket records, attendances, we've got the highest in the National League on average. And, you know, Bromley, which is the next home game, Football for a Fiver, an international break, is already sold out for home fans. And it's still got another 11 days before we actually play the games.
That's quite incredible, isn't
you know,
that?
And no disrespect, it's only Bromley. It's not like a big game.
Sellout, but not all the seats are sold, in terms of there's a slight problem with the flooring on one of the stands, in the old stand. So
the east stand, isn't it?
The east stand. So there's a, but they've sold as many seats as they can sell.
Yeah.
So although it won't be a capacity crowd of 9,200, it won't be. They've sold all the tickets, and that's the second time this season. We had it against Hartlepool a few weeks ago. So it's really impressive, and that's exactly the kind of targeted things that we probably should have been doing all the time. You know, we're supposedly the Cinderella, you know, everyone's second favourite London club. So when all your teams are playing away, why not say come down with your season ticket and pay a fiver, or just do it for a fiver anyway? There's incentivise people to come and watch us and not go.
It's a great initiative.
It's a London derby, but not a London derby that you'd expect to be so popular and sell out.
And also, I mean, if you're a West Ham fan, how disillusioned are you with your club at the moment? And this big old horrible empty stadium, owners who seem to not care about you, and you can go one stop from Stratford down the central line, watch Football for a Fiver, get much closer to the action, and these are players who you can go into the bar afterwards and they're there in the bar to talk to your kid or to go thanks for coming and have that conversation.
Yeah.
In the Premier League,
you ain't getting
a West Ham player or any player for that matter who's coming into the bar.
And even from a Bromley perspective, you get a lot of Charlton fans in that area, didn't you, Charlie?
Bromley,
like Charlton aren't playing on the 17th now because their game against Portsmouth's called off. So you could, like, if you're a Charlton fan, go up and watch
that. It's a great initiative, absolutely.
Yeah, the club reap the benefits of it. If you go once and you see a good game,
score goals, especially kids, they want to see goals.
Yeah,
kids don't really care too much about the 4-4-2s or the this one or the that one, or possession. they want to see the Rabonas, they want to see the stuff that Messi's doing, which, all right, it might not be as glamorous in E10, but they want to see goals, they want to be entertained ultimately.
Yeah.
And if you see your team win 4-0 and you're seeing four goals and the stadium's rocking and everyone's singing and there's positivity and there's all the usual noise pre-match and, you know, there's good food on offer that you can access at the kiosks and so on, it makes for a great experience. And the club are doing a lot to engage younger supporters because it's the future of the club ultimately, and they're doing as much with the Leighton Orient Trust going out to schools and the players going out to these schools to meet people. So there's a lot, it's a massive joined up effort. We've got a hub now where kids can go or community groups can use and go pre-match. So the whole experience, they've really thought about the experience of a match day as well. They did an incentive where turning up early, I think Dream Team and the club teamed up for the last game, the last sort of match for a fiver, where you, if you turned up, or the first 1,500 people that turned up got a free drink, soft drink or a bottle of beer or something. So, and a free programme as well, if I'm not mistaken, on one of them. So that Dream Team, again, paid for. So, you know, there's all these little things that if you paid a fiver, you'd get decent football for once, and you get a beer or a soft drink and a donut as well, if I remember rightly, for a couple of quid or something. So for it makes an afternoon out to London reasonably.
Nigel probably imported a load over.
Of course. Oh, they were all Orient O-nuts.
Clever.
Yeah. But more importantly, though, it is good to be scoring goals again, and it's nice when, you know, you go away to a team on Saturday who haven't conceded a league goal for 610 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And by the fourth minute, you're one up. And this is a defence that hasn't been breached in 10 hours of football and 4 minutes in.
Bond's already scored goals all season, right? Yeah.
You know, and also on Saturday, Josh Caroma, again, who we probably haven't mentioned as much as what we should have, to a certain extent, scores an absolute blinding goal, beats two players, curls it on the outside of the boot. That's Messi. You're watching out Sky Sports all day.
Well, that's it.
Absolutely. And it'll be replayed and replayed until to the death.
Yeah.
But because it's only in the conference, it's not really considered good enough.
But we were lucky. I mean, some of the goals this season have been absolutely outrageous. Charlie Lee against Hammond and Walter Louisville.
35 yards.
We had a few screamers from McEnough.
Because McEnough, I mean, I remember when he was at Watford. He's played at a high level.
5 years ago, he was playing for Reading in the Premier League.
Yeah, and who? It just shows his character.
Reading in the Premier League.
Joby
was,
yeah. Yeah, it just shows his character, because, I mean, you guys are obviously smitten with him at the moment.
Yeah, and he's the nicest guy as well.
Well, that's it, and he comes
there's
across
no arrogance or pretense.
Interviews I've seen with him, and he stayed at Orient.
I mean, the high assessment you can give to Joby McEnough is his first spell at the club was a disaster. I think we can all say he was treated absolutely appallingly. Goes to Stevenage for a year, gets an offer to come back, and most players wouldn't even want to. He comes back and has just been absolutely sensational. 36 years old now, running games, his vision is still as good as what it's ever been. He's our club captain, he's a massive player. When you speak to Justin says he's the best player he's ever managed.
Yeah, really.
So, I mean, the amount of respect Joby has at the club, I mean, his deal expires at the end of this season. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets at least another 1 year deal, at least as a minimum.
Well, I think that would probably be prudent, things crossed, you do go up, to keep those types of players, because it's
Massive influence. He's a massive influence on the younger players. You can see when he's talking to them, you can see when the club's posting videos at the training ground or other areas, just how important Joby is, and no one's got a bad word to say about the guy. And again, after the match, you'll find him talking to fans and kids, you know, in the gallery. And again, what other club captains are doing that?
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, he's got that experience. He's been there. He's done it. He's played at the highest
international
level.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been in the Prem with Reading and Palace. He was part of.
Was he at Watford as well?
It was at Watford. I think. As well. I think he might have been in the Prem at Watford. I'm not sure, but he was part of the Palace side that nicked a draw out of Arsenal's Invincibles. Drew at Old Trafford. He's been there. He's done it. He knows what it takes.
Yeah, and he's played for Jamaica internationally as well on more than one occasion, so he's not just a chancer.
One at Anfield as well, so yeah.
So and also the great thing about him is that having played at that level, you'd think that he would come and bowl around the club like he's the big I am, but actually you couldn't be further from the truth. Actually, he's probably a little bit shyer and probably has the right to do that, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
And he's just a supreme professional. He keeps his body in absolute mint condition. Well, not that I've seen it, but to be able to do what he does at 36, 37 years old. I mean, there aren't too many people doing that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And there aren't too many people at that age that would drop to this level and still be performing.
Well,
to
that's
that
it. Level. I mean, that really does
I mean, you know, to drop because Stevenage were there in League Two now.
They are.
Yeah, I mean, he had quite a good season at Stevenage.
Yeah.
To be fair, I think he could have. I think he had the option to actually stay at Stevenage. So the fact we got him and he wanted to come, and the fact, like you said, he's in shape. He's one of the fittest guys on the pitch, and when he's walking off the pitch after 90 minutes, like he rarely, if ever, gets subbed. Mm. He looks like he can do another 90. He's still got the corner taking abilities. His corners have been sensational, and he's come up with a few important goals this season.
Yeah, that's the players you need, isn't it?
And some of them have been good goals as well.
Yeah,
and long may continue.
And he was moved into the middle following a Charlie Lee injury at the weekend, so he's adaptable as well.
Yeah, which is key. Just looking at the fixtures, we mentioned it before we came on air. Obviously, 19 games in, you've only lost one. Surprisingly, you're not top. But Wrexham are also, it's a real battle at the top.
If you look at all competitions, I think it's like 4 out of 25 you've lost, or 6 out of 30, yes. Some 31, 32 or something you've lost.
Fantastic.
Back to last season
in all
competitions.
You're hard to beat. Clearly, Wrexham are obviously standing in your way at the moment. I think you dropped points a couple of weeks ago, and I think they sort of managed to just get away slightly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very tough division up there. I think at the moment Salford, Wrexham and us, we were top. Coming out of the previous Saturday, we drew away at Eastleigh, and then we dropped to third off the back of a draw because the other two won, and then on Saturday we won, Wrexham won, Salford drew, so now we're second, a point behind Wrexham. But we have Wrexham two weeks on Saturday.
Yes, which is great. And it's obviously, for those who may not know, because I mean, I had to check this. It's only the top team that go up. The rest are in the scramble. It is the playoffs. But Wrexham in a couple of weeks, what massive game! Obviously, it's away, so you guys will be sort of by your phones. And do you listen to it online? Do you have that? So you're going to be listening to it. What do you really expect from the Wrexham game?
It wouldn't surprise me if we go to Wrexham and win.
Right,
I think being the away team might actually suit our game more than being the home team. Wrexham, our away form is very, very good. We've actually just matched club records, so first 10 away games of the season unbeaten.
Because I mean, looking at your fixtures, you're scoring a lot of goals away as well. I mean, you won last weekend away.
I think we scored goals away, but we keep it tight away as well. Rarely do we concede away from home, and once we get that goal, we are very hard to score against once we go one up.
And the more you do that throughout the season, the more psychologically teams will
fear you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Go on. I mean, once you go a goal up with our front two of Cromer and Bon, we can then hit you on the counter attack, and that's exactly plays into Justin's hands, I think.
But I think quite crucially as well, what Justin doesn't do is he doesn't adapt too much to how the other team are going to play. We have a 4-4-2 formation that he sticks to rigidly, and Craig Clay played at right back because of suspensions and injuries, but ultimately we're playing our game, and we're taking our game to the opposition, and it's for the opposition to deal with that. So we're overloading them because we've got such attack minded players, but also players that are so fit that they'll help out the back five as well. So it's very much for opposition teams to figure out a way to get past us, and while they're doing that, we're scoring. So it is great, but not to, you know, it's very tight. There are Salford on 39, us on 40, and Wrexham on 41. That's the top three. And then you're talking 37 with Harrogate, Solihull, Moors, surprise package, them two at 36. So it's still really, really tight. You lose a couple, they win a couple, and it looks very, very different.
So, Harrogate, I think, are one of those best for the rest, because they've lost to you, they lost to Salford, I think. Have they played? I'm not sure.
We took their unbeaten run away from them.
Wrexham, they've lost to. So
good team.
But I don't think they're personally strong enough. That's my opinion anyway. I'm just looking at your fixtures, your next 12 fixtures. 7 of those are at home. And apart from Wrexham, your away trips are fairly localish, or you could say for a National League level, Borehamwood, Dagenham, Dover and Ebbsfleet. Is that, do you think this little run will define where you end up with 7 at home and maybe the more local away trips around the winter
time? That will take you right through to Christmas, I imagine.
That will take you through to the end of January.
End of January, so then it is really...
I think we just need to keep it going. Like, it's nice to have a break, but it's probably fallen at the wrong time. I think if you ask Justin if he wanted to play this Saturday after beating Fylde and after scoring, I think, eight goals in the last three games, I think he'd want to play this Saturday.
But
our home form, we have to break teams more down at home, but I think we're finding ways to do it, but there's no fixtures that you look at and go, right, I think we're going to lose that one. You go, okay, I think we'll win that one. I think we might draw this one. I think we might win this one, win that one, draw that one. You're not looking at any fixtures going, that looks tough. I mean, Ebbsfleet away possibly could be quite tough.
I don't think it will be as tough as what you think, given the troubles that they've got.
Possibly.
They're having a bit of a fire sale.
And in that run, you've got Salford at home on January the 5th.
Yeah, nice. I mean, to the new year, that.
But before that, we've got to get past Bromley. We've got to get past Wrexham. We've got Aldershot at home. Gateshead away. These aren't that hard.
Aldershot home on a Tuesday night is a typical Orient tough game. So we spoke about last season. Gateshead, Torquay, Maidenhead. Those are games where Orient traditionally have lost points. So they'll be difficult games, but hopefully we can come through them. But yeah, Tuesday night at home game worries me a little bit.
In December, Boreham Wood's a tough one because they've done well, Boreham Wood. Good to get to the final last year. You've got Chesterfield, Dagenham. I know they're struggling, but still a derby. They're going to be up for it, aren't they? So
yeah, I mean, they're improving, aren't they, Dagenham? They had a bit of a bad start. They've kind of got much better.
And Dagenham twice, actually. Obviously.
Well, that's how they do it in the National League. Yeah. They actually make the...
Boxing Day, New Year Day.
Local derbies, because people don't want to be travelling, you know, to Carlisle on Boxing Day. No one wants to come from Carlisle to London. You know, it should be local.
Yeah.
This is a sensible policy that the National League had. I wish the EFL did as well.
Yeah.
Because we've been to here, there and everywhere on Boxing Day. No one wants to travel the length and breadth of the country on Boxing Day, unless you don't like that sort of thing. You haven't got a big family that you really want to see or whatever. Mm. But ultimately, it should be. It should be tasty and interesting and make people want to get up and go.
At least you can get to Dagenham on Boxing Day. A lot of people can't get around on public transport Boxing Day.
Well, that's it, isn't it, as well?
I mean, every game in the National League is tough. I think if you ask Kent and Nigel and Justin, they'd want to be there or thereabouts come March and April. Yeah. And we see where we end up. It's like, it's a marathon, isn't it? Yeah. Not a sprint. I think as a Portsmouth fan over there, I think, you know, you were only top of the league for 35 minutes 2 years ago and you won the league. That's the time.
That is mad, isn't it?
That's the time you want to be top.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter until that final whistle goes on the 46th game.
You could be
second or third throughout the season. That's where you end on that 46. So, you know, we will drop points. It's going to happen. We're going to lose when we shouldn't lose. But so will Salford.
Yeah.
So will Wrexham. And it's about how we bounce back from there. But again, it's been a fantastic season so far. Comfortably second, seeing some great football. It'll be interesting to come back here in May, hopefully, talking about a
promotion.
National League winners.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. We should definitely have you guys back on because I think times are good. You know, it'd be interesting maybe after that run in January would be good. If you guys are about, of course, and maybe we see if we can get you back on and discuss it.
Promotion show.
But, yeah.
Promotion party in the ELL studios. Everyone come down.
That's it. Promotion party. A few people in here, maybe.
They'll all be out there queuing up.
final predictions after 19 games. Well, you've seen a fair amount of football. What, heart of hearts, what do you reckon? How would you think you're in the season?
I think we'll be there or thereabouts. That's all I'm going to say on that one.
Yeah, it's going to be really difficult because Wrexham and Salford will run all the way. I mean, you know, Salford particularly are backed well with money, so if they start to dip off, they can always go in and sign. That's not a problem. We can do that to a lesser extent. I mean, you know, we're not paying people sort of several thousand pounds a week to come and play for us. But again, you shouldn't underestimate the teams in this division if you do so at your peril, like we learnt last season. I'd like to think, I want us to go up as champions. I don't want that Wembley trip again. But as a worst case, it's second or third.
Right. Nice.
It is about time. Leighton Orient won a playoff, though, at Wembley.
Yeah.
So if it isn't to be the champions, and I hope it is, but if not...
Yeah, you're saying this
early. Hopefully. What better way to win at Wembley?
The day out.
You know, all the Orient fans listening are going to be like, Steve, you're an absolute idiot.
But you're saying about Wrexham and Salford as well.
Yeah.
They actually play each other on the Boxing Day, New Year's Day reverse. So thinking about that, could define the season and work in your favour.
Yeah, of course. Really. Then you could get a little bit of breathing space.
Then playing each other twice quickly in succession.
That works well because if they draw all...
Both games.
Both games, and we win both games. You're talking a point each.
You've got two
points versus our six. I mean, it starts to set a little bit of a gap.
Dagenham and Dover over Christmas, so.
And then Dagenham on New Year's Day.
Nice.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Guys, obviously, you've got a
great fan base, but anyone that might not sort of listen to the podcast or not come across it, where can they listen? Where can they follow you, etc.? Please sell yourselves.
Thank you. Do whatever they like. So they can follow us on Twitter at Orient Outlook, on Facebook at Orient Outlook Podcast, on Instagram Orient_Outlook_podcast. You can email us at orientoutlook@outlook.com. You can listen to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, Android apps.
Yeah, we're everywhere.
Literally everywhere.
Alexa. Alexa will even play latest edition. So if you're
even Alexa, the late Nora fan.
Exactly. Alexa is a late Nora fan. Yeah.
So if you want to follow, please follow. If you want to listen, please listen, and do get in contact with us.
Yeah. And the next home game, as we've been speaking about, is Bromley on the 17th. Should be a great day out. Obviously, like you said,
London Derby.
Yeah. All tickets are sold out now.
0-0 all over it.
So if you haven't been, make sure you get down
there. A bit like the Hartlepool game. Do you know what? I was annoyed that day because I was in my both teams to score and it come up 0-0.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, we'll have a word with Justin. We'll have to sort it out.
Football for five. Everyone's looking forward to it. It turns out to be a 0-0.
0-0.
So sorry, you can't get tickets for that game, but the next game at home is the 27th against Aldershot.
Tuesday night.
So football under the floodlights. I love football under the floodlights.
Yeah, I do as well. There's something quite alluring about it.
It's on a crisp evening. It's getting a bit colder out there, but wrap up warm and head down. But thanks, guys, for coming along.
Absolute pleasure as always.
Pleasure. Yes. Thanks for having us.
We're going to cover some live, some other sport. I don't know if you play a song. I probably should have given you a head up. Can you play a quick song?
Yeah, we can play a quick song if you want. What should I stick on? Anything?
Anything we'll do. Guys, stay tuned. We're going to cover Wapping Hockey Club, obviously Lee Valley Lions, and we're going to touch on the London Lions for the remaining part of the show. So,
see you in a minute.
Speak to you. Hey, welcome back to the show. We've got some local sports to cover as usual. Start off with our Wapping Hockey Club. Six busy weekend of hockey for those guys. 16 games across the board, and it was the winning feeling across Wapping. They've won 10 out of the 16 fixtures. Notable results was the men's first won 5-0, which was the standout result. The men's four won a close battle with Chelmsford, seconds 4-3. And there were some fantastic ones. There was one that I saw earlier. This is it. Yeah, the ladies' thirds beat Wootton 11-0. So Babs Logaidis, probably haven't pronounced that correctly, which is a standard weekly thing for me. It's called a hat-trick, so well done to them. So 10 wins out of 16. Fantastic feeling. Fantastic
results. Just get the pronunciation results. King, Pete Dudley. He can announce it.
He's very good at pronouncing names.
Yes, he
That's
is.
A good
very
notice.
Good, yes.
And they've also got some exciting news. They've got Wapping, who are a very sort of forward-thinking club. They're also doing a Wapping Hockey Club goalkeeper masterclass with former GB coach John Hurst, which is a great opportunity. It's a ticketed event. It's £30 for adults and £15 for children, but it's 2 hours of some great coaching on Sunday the 18th of November at the Lee Valley Stadium pitch as well. So you get to be coached by a GB coach for 2 hours, and you're playing under you will be probably under the floodlights at 4:30 of the Olympic Park. So there is still spaces available, so do contact the club to get involved. Here's the email address, gkeyacademy@wappinghockeyclub.com, to secure your place, which is always great. And I've also got some contact details here for the club. You can follow them on Twitter at WappingHC, and also they've got, as we've said before in previous weeks, they've got a big kids club. The juniors program is forever growing. I think the Rio 2016 certainly helped with that. I know they had a lot of people in at Wapping Kids as well. So if you've got any more, if you want to sort of check in on those guys, please do check them out, wappinghockeyclub.com. Again, very forward thinking and a great entertainment. 10 wins out of 16 is a fantastic result. So some really good performances there. So well done for all the winning teams, and commiserations for losing teams. There's always next week, as we know. Do you follow hockey much, guys, at all? Sorry, I've just jumped on you there. I saw your tweeting, etc.
Not really, but 11-0 sounds like a great game, so let's have some of those players.
I was about to say, they've got their... maybe they're drinking the same sports drinks the Lake Norrie guys at the moment.
Maybe. There's something in the water in the east.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't, to be honest with you. There's a lot of sport locally at amateur level or semi-pro level that I should probably, but I just don't have the time.
Well, that's it, isn't it? There's always so much on offer. And another local team, which I would definitely recommend seeing, is Lee Valley Lions, the ice hockey team. we've got in touch with them, and really kindly we get their press conference press
and
releases.
They placed us up the road from the Orient at the Evaluation Centre on Cambridge Road. So
they used to do some kind of partnership with Orient where you could get in cheap with a season ticket or something. So but there's a connection there, or there was.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see if there is sort of any relation. Still, I mean, Lawrence, I have to say thank you to Lawrence again, who's kindly sent over the press release. It was a tough weekend, so he didn't shy away, though. He still sent it over where they lost, unfortunately, took on a very difficult Bracknell Hornets team and lost 21-3. So it was a really tough loss. But to be fair, Bracknell Hornets have got some players that have played in much higher level, and it just obviously it was one of those games. I think in like all sports, sometimes it's just not your day, and this is obviously one of them. But there's still some opportunity to see them. There's a bit of a derby going on the 10th. I would definitely recommend seeing this. London, obviously Lee Valley Lions feed the Haringey Huskies on the 10th of the 11th at 5:30 as well, which is a great time to go, sort of an early evening activity. All ages welcome, of course. You can find out more about that at leevalleylions.co.uk. They also play the game the day after as well. This is an obscure thing about which you don't really get in football. You get sort of back-to-back games sometimes.
I don't know, I could be handling two games in 2 days.
Yeah, it might be especially for the fans
done
as well.
That
as
a few years ago, and there's a lot of non-league clubs that have done it with
really.
With
they've had to if you've got a big squad, I suppose. Yeah. But they take on Romford at 5:30 again. Sorry, that is away. So both games are away, so you don't have to go far though, because the Haringey Huskies play at Ali Pally, so a little bit of a trip up north, North London, not too far up north of course, but well worth doing that. But yeah, I would definitely recommend. I do enjoy a night at the ice hockey.
Yeah, just a couple of scores by the way in the Champions League.
Yes,
Red Star Belgrade have beaten Liverpool by 2-0.
Wow. What do you think of that, gentlemen?
Latest score in League One: Lyle Taylor's penalties, but Charlton ahead of Walsall 1-0.
Do you know what? Lyle Taylor. This is a funny one. I don't know what you guys think of this. Lyle Taylor has had 5 penalties this season, and he's scored 3 and missed 2.
We had Jay Simpson.
Jason
did miss a couple at points, but scored more than what he missed. So as long as they scored more than what they missed and they hit the target, I think it's fine.
For you, for the ratio, I mean, that's what... So he scored his 3rd on tonight, to be fair. But before tonight, it was missed 2, scored 2. And he's actually lost it for a little bit where Tarek took one and scored one in the temptation. But Lee Bowyer, who was obviously our manager, has kept faith in him. But fair play to him. Hopefully that will stay... Not at the Valley, is it? That's away.
That's at the Bescot or the Bankster Stadium, whatever you call it, up there.
Yeah, Bankster Stadium. Yeah.
You've been there, guys?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah nice stadium, actually. Nice away end, actually.
Yeah.
One of the greatest Orient goals in the last 15 years was scored there when the tiny maestro Dean Cox decided to ship the keeper from the halfway line.
Still within our half, if I'm not mistaken.
Round about, give or take.
I didn't go to that game.
Just about to
superb
kick,
goal.
Just about to kick off
at an empty Wembley.
Is Tottenham against PSV Eindhoven? We don't know where that is because they play everywhere these days. Tottenham.
That's a dig.
Wembley?
Yeah.
Is that Wembley? No. I was say, are you gonna loan them the stadium or Brisbane Road at some point?
I think I'm knocking.
If the price is right.
With your own, is it?
If they pay for the pitch to be like the Wembley pitch, the artificial
That's Tottenham with ex-Orient star Harry Kane.
Of course, Orient, he's done the rounds. I mean, is there any reference to... I mean, to Harry? I mean, he'd probably be the best loan player you've had.
He was only with us for a very short spell. I think he scored his first professional goal in English football.
Yeah, Kevin Campbell was probably a good one for us.
Kevin Campbell.
Very good loan.
Kevin Campbell.
Andros Townsend.
Of course.
As well. So we've had a few from
he scored at the weekend.
Tom Carroll.
I thought he'd do better than he is.
Where is he? Swansea
was last where I saw him.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a few back in the day. We used to have quite a good relationship with Tottenham. Back in the day where Premier League clubs would loan players out as opposed to not loan them out and keep them for the under 23. So we used to get quite a few back in the day.
It'd be interesting in December. Arsenal have got Tottenham twice in December in the league.
And the Carabao.
Right, and the Carabao Cup, that'll be interesting. Well, it's very nice of Arsenal, isn't it, to welcome in your homeless neighbours twice over Christmas, isn't it? So
nice. It is a bit of a mad. It is a bit of a mad situation up in Tottenham for sure.
Solid burn. Get the aloe vera out. Someone's got a burn.
Yeah. just barely cover the obviously local team, local London Lions, who have been busy as usual. They beat the Manchester Giants by 83-86 away in Manchester, which was a good battle because, to be honest, they normally get the...
They've done well last year, didn't they?
Yeah, comfortably win. They normally comfortably beat Manchester. They also played their exhibition game against the big baller brand, USA, midweek, which was part of... If you listened last week, it was LeVar Ball, who's the father of Lonzo Ball, who plays the LA Lakers. So it's quite well known in the game for sure. Just to have a check the standings, it's looking pretty good for London. They are top of the pile, played 7, 1, 6, lost 1.
I think they've done very well last season, didn't they?
They did. And hopefully they can improve in the playoffs and really get some sort of momentum going into that. And just a couple of mentions for the big players. Brandon Peel, who I always highly rate, 19 points and 6 and 7 rebounds. Another solid performance for him. And also, it was a bit of a quiet game for Jordan Spencer. He only got 8 points, 3 from 9 for the field. And Justin Robinson, who's arguably the best player in the league and from East London as well, which is always a nice added touch. He's got 22 points as well as... 6 rebounds. God, that is a, I don't think he's got as many. And 3 assists. So well done, London. You can catch those guys. They're actually away at Leicester on Friday, but their next home game is not until the 18th of November, actually, which is, well, that's only, is it?
Two weeks.
Yeah, here we go. Against Worcester Wolves. So that's always always good to see those guys playing at the Copper Box. But yeah, that's the London Lions roundup. You can find out more about those guys, londonlions.com.
Yes.
But right, we're bang on time, 8 o'clock.
Yes.
Right, thank you for everyone for tuning in, and thank you guys. Oh, actually, I forgot to mention, you mentioned I'm not very bearded at the moment. I don't know if I had a beard when you guys were last in. I've had a beard for about 18 months.
Two bearded legends in the building.
Yeah, I've trimmed mine as well.
Yeah, well, I'm...
You're doing Movember.
I am, yes, but I've just noticed in the mirror this morning I probably need to crack on and get rid of a little bit of this. But yeah, Movember, to be honest, I was reluctant to do it, just the whole trauma of shaving a beard off, etc. But then the guys at work sort of maybe do it, and it is for a great cause as well. So I've tweeted my link for my page, so...
What's your Twitter handle?
At a sports fan. I'm going to retweet on the LR1. At a sports fans view, he knows my Twitter handle.
Well done.
But I'll make sure I retweet it. But yeah, I'm raising money for it. I thought, as of now, doing... the last time I raised money was for a marathon, which was obviously very painful. But to be honest, I think the pain of hacking away at a beard was probably worse.
I've got to be honest, I'd rather grow a moustache and do a 26-mile run.
Yeah, I agree. On the grand scheme of things, yeah.
But kudos to you for doing that. That's
thank
a lot
you.
Of effort.
I'll share that. So if anyone's got any sort of spare pennies, it's only the 4th of November, so it's a long time to go for my poor face.
6th to today.
Is it the 6th, sorry?
Yeah.
Where did I get
so
the 4th?
I've given you 2 days there.
There you go. I'm nearly there. You're
2 days closer to your
I
target.
Definitely need to trim with it. But yeah, I thought I'd throw that in, because why not?
Why not? Absolutely.
But yeah, Adam, thank you for
you're welcome.
Covering the desk. Always appreciated.
You're welcome.
And yeah, guys, thanks so much for coming along. It's
pleasure. You know, always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Yeah, it's great. The passion for the club. It's great to hear. I mean, me and Steve, we talk about it when we look at the results and stuff, but to really get insight from you guys, and we must come down again. I've got a couple of I think I'm at Norwich Millwall on Saturday, but I'm going to look at some of the Saturday fixtures, and I don't think you guys play on Tuesday for a little while, do you, at home?
Not till the end of the month.
Just Aldershot and that's it. No more Tuesday night
I've
games.
Noticed that the other day. Work have been down a few times. But yeah, anyway, thank you guys. Much
pleasure.
Appreciated. We're put the link out on various social media forums, and thanks for listening live, and if you want to have a listen again, why not? We'll be on Mixcloud, and we're working on the iTunes as well, so please do keep an eye out for that. And yeah, great. We'll be same place next week. We'll be Steve should be back. If not, one of us will be here and to cover all things East London sport. You're going to be in Portsmouth, aren't you?
I'm Portsmouth Tottenham.
Of course you are. Yeah. Anyway.
And PSV have just scored.
Just scored.
And up the O's.
Gentlemen, thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night.